Welcome back. You're listening to another episode of The Todd Donald Show, a weekly podcast where artists and performers go to chat about nothing. Hosted by Canadian singer-songwriter Todd Donald.
Hey, everybody. I'm very excited to introduce the guest, but before that, and there is a point. So I've been interviewing people as far back as 06 on college radio, and my first podcast doing the show I wanted to do since 08. And it slowly evolved over time for sure. And I kind of feel bad for any time I might have scolded the very idea of people coming on and posturing or curating themselves and not getting vulnerable. You know, everyone has their own zone of comfort and ability to articulate a certain knowing of themselves or whatever. A level of concern regarding something needing to be promoted above all else. And I myself am still figuring out how to be a host that can create a comfort level on the spot to invite people to open up, maybe be vulnerable, maybe not, but surely goof off with me. And I never want to avoid talking about nothing, things that have nothing to do with their product or whatever, too. How do I even articulate this, I would say? As a huge fan of Jonah Ray, the actor-comedian via MST3K a few years ago, as you'll hear me illustrate to the man, I got into his podcast, Jonah Radio. And as you'll hear us talking about, this is surely what I found to be the gold standard for the vibe I wanted for my show. Jonah Ray is a name, IMO. Todd Donald is not, but it's in the name. And the thing that I love the most about Jonah Radio is you're definitely listening to Jonah, Cash, and Neil hanging out. When there's a guest on the show, you'll hear their music, thoughts, stories, whatever they're up to, but even still, it's hanging out. And there's no particular urgency or agenda, and even if there is, it's not being forced on the show. You just understand, yeah, there's an event, or I stand for this, is obviously accepted and encouraged, but never at the expense of the energy that we're in a safe place, and it's very in the moment. Sometimes I don't even do a great job as a host being in the moment, depending on the day, but I'm just explaining that Jonah Radio was the podcast I didn't know I always needed as a listener or podcast maker. And 3 or so years later, holy shit, full circle event, I'm about to introduce someone who for me defined the podcast vibe I'm going for on this episode, where we talk about the work he's done, how he's feeling lately, life in general, creative expression, performing, and oh shit, we talk about Bill and Ted, Face the Music, and being 90s kids whose only method of entertaining started with VHS tapes and CDs, just trying to make something that felt awesome and how much we love stuff. So I'll close this off by mentioning, of course, Jonah Radio is his podcast. He started The Nerdist over a decade ago with Chris Hardwick and Matt Mira, a ground and record-breaking podcast, I'm sure. He's got terrific stand-up albums available. More recently released the second of his musical releases. He stars in 2 wonderful seasons of Hidden America on CISO, 3 seasons of The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail on Comedy Central. My discovery of this charming gent was the Netflix revival Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, and The Gauntlet, co-starring Patton Oswalt, Felicia Day, Hampton Yount, Baron Vaughn, Rebecca Hanson, and its creator, Joel Hodgson. So many amazing writers, too. It's so fucking great. So what's quarantine been like? What's he working on now? How does the future look for him and whatever else? Here to speak for himself, Jonah Ray. Do you get jitters when you're chatting with someone for the first time that you really admire? And if so, like, yeah, what do you do in the day to sort of make it easier?
Man, it's because there's no way around it. You know, you just have to appreciate it as excitement and not think of it as nervousness, because it truly is excitement.
Yeah.
And I think the body, you know, and mind kind of get confused and they don't know the difference, because it is a similar feeling of kind of overstimulation. And so I kind of just don't think about it. And then, so the less I think about it, the more I just kind of naturally flow into it when I go into it, when I start talking to somebody. Right. But you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you never know if you're going to immediately be relaxed and put at ease, or if some kind of feeling of indifference is going to spike it even more. You know, you never know. And after so long of doing this kind of stuff, you don't know. So you can't, it's a waste of energy to worry about what's going to happen.
Right.
And I certainly don't think of myself as like a sycophantic kind of person. Like I put myself in a different species of human. it's just like, you know, this is a very temporary thing and I want to do the best job I can for that person and for the show in general. But that's secondary to like for the person.
Sorry, I just cut out. Yep. Do you hear me? Hello.
We're back.
Hello. Okay, there we are. Sorry about that. I apologize. I think my Ethernet cable, like my Wi-Fi cut out, and then I think my Ethernet cable tried to switch it up, and I apologize for that. You were in the middle of starting to say something, and then you cut out, and then I must have seemed like a dick.
It would have been a really funny bit so, if you're like, you're, sorry, Todd, I just got really fucking bored.
Yeah. You know what? I think I made a mistake. Click, and then for some reason there's a dial tone. You're like, why is there a dial tone? This is a Zoom call.
And this following me going like, I'm really nervous.
Yeah, exactly.
I recently asked YouTube for some Jonah Ray stand-up that I hadn't seen before, and it was called like Punk Rock Bowling, something like that. And you're talking about a time in your life when you weren't going out as much anymore, but like you didn't want to go home, and you would sit in the car parked and drink coffee. That was still the last I'm not surrendering. And I'm like, that's fucking me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that's people start to relate to it. And then when I do the analogous kind of a jokey punch to that one where it's like, I just sit in a parked car drinking coffee like a dad that hasn't told his family he's been laid off yet.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the one people start to laugh and then they go, oh.
That is
like, he still leaves for work every morning with the briefcase going, I'll see you after work. And then he just sits in his car drinking coffee.
I don't know what it is about going out. Like, I guess I kind of miss that desperation I used to have that would keep me out longer. Like, I was up all night to get lucky kind of desperation, or desperate to meet people and prove myself. Whereas, yeah,
that's a huge thing. Yeah. And then that's, I think, what it is. I mean, it's like, it's when you're kind of starved for, it's a bunch of things. I think you're like, it's like not starved, like, cause that makes a negative connotation, but like you get excited about meeting people or the prospect of meeting people or the prospect of getting into something that you didn't even plan. And so you could have, have fun with the impulse of just going like, you know, meeting somebody and someone going like, let's go here. And you're like, all right. Cause you're by yourself. And that's kind of, you know, fun. A little bit of, I think it is like when we're younger, it's like, if I play the numbers, like maybe I'll meet a girl and get to make out or something like that, you know? And then on top of that, it's just like, it really is just kind of meeting people. And then on the bad side of it, it is a lot of, I truly believe it's like a lot of like, it's like, I don't want to be home with my thoughts right now.
Right. Yeah. And after that, still going along with this, it there's something kind of extra special about the things that get you a new version of that excited, like maybe discovering Jonah Radio for me was one of those. And that's still one of my favorite podcasts of all time.
Oh, wow. Thanks, man. That means a lot.
Aside from also relating on the necessity of taking long, hot showers, my body between getting out of bed and taking a hot shower, this is an impression of my body before taking a hot shower and my brain being awake before that happens. I fucking hate you. Maybe we both relate to that, for that interpretation of what you said.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. That not necessarily what I was going for with the idea. Like,
No.
I just really, it's incredibly relaxing to me to just stand in a hot shower. But that doesn't have to be mutually exclusive to me hating my body.
No, I think I can speak for you. No,
it's funny because that it reminds me so much of like, my friends put out this album, and there was this, the band was called Toys That Kill, and they had this a song on their second album called Wired Resident. It was written by Sean Cole, and I knew the band, and like, I was like, I listened to the lyrics, and I was just like, I know exactly what this is about. Oh my God, I'm going to talk to him about it. We get on the phone, and he's like, well, so let me tell me what you thought about it, or what you think it's about. And I went like kind of line by line saying like, this is about that guy, Tony. And this is about kind of when we were all living on that street. And this is about blah, blah, blah. And this is like kind of like drugs were like a little bit more rampant and it kind of messed up relationships. And he's like, okay, all right. Yeah, no, that's really cool. It's about Nancy Reagan. And I was like, oh, he's like, yeah, it's about Nancy Reagan. Like, you know, like saying don't do drugs when she was hopped up on speed the whole time and having to go to rehab. And I was like, oh, right on, right on.
Yeah. Here's a clip. It's like, Samsonite. I was way off.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How would you describe Jonah Radio, the podcast?
Three friends with large amounts of animosity towards each other, listening to new music and talking about what's happening in music, and getting angry at each other. I guess that would be the case. You know, like the idea of it was just like for fun. It was like a fun,
right.
You know, like these are my two buddies that aren't necessarily performers, but they're, you know, they make me laugh and I like hanging out with them and just kind of having them on and do the show with me. And just because we all had like, you know, we all had similar interests in music, but we all like very different, you know, ways. Like where Cash is, you know, he's more of a hippie. So he loves, you know, Grateful Dead and ska and kind of like really works that way. But Neil's like, you know, he likes louder kind of stuff, but like also very picky about what he listens to and what he'll pick up on, and more hip hop than either Cash or I. And then I just kind of love kind of exploring, but I also love kind of like garage rock and punk and kind of keep up with that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I guess it was just a way to kind of keep up with music and joke around. And I really wanted it to just kind of feel like hanging out with your friends in high school or college. I didn't go to college, but like, you know, that like that young feeling of talking about music, exploring new music, and just, you know, razzing on each other and fucking around. And those dumb conversations that come out of just, you know, old friends that where you're just kind of, you know, bored and hanging out.
That that's a well articulated what I think it is. And of course there's more, because there's games and there's music news and there's guests and everything.
Yeah.
And but it is essentially like a hangout show. It strikes me as not being, it's not trying to be liked by everybody. And it's essentially like a punk rock podcast. For me, it's like, why do I like this one as opposed to probably millions of other podcasts that are essentially by definition the same thing? And I think the main thing is, I mean, I love the jib of Cash and Neil, and ever since a few years ago seeing Mystery Science Theater, I've just loved the cut of your jibs. You guys got some sweet jibs, and it was home for me in my car for a few years there. So thank you.
That's great. And that's kind of what we wanted. It's like, you know, that when we started the Nerdist, like
podcast,
we started
name drop.
Kind of doing, well, I mean, it's part of my life. So it's, I guess it's a... It's a podcast I started, so I guess I'm allowed to name drop it. Is it a drop if it's just a fact? when we started it, like, you know, when the fans really started connecting, when they started kind of building a community, it was when we started doing like, you know, hostful, what we called hostful episodes, which was without a guest. And that's when, like, I think the dynamics really shone through and the connection with the audience. And I realized that like people like that. And I, you know, it's, and that's the idea of Jonah Radio is, it's like, you know, not everyone's going to be our friends. So I'm not trying to really make it so this show's accessible to everybody. It's never really been the stuff I liked, and it's never been the stuff I made for the most part. Like, I just wanted it to feel like if you had this on in the background, then maybe, you know, you were doing something while your friends are hanging out.
Yeah.
That was the big idea behind it.
Yeah.
Hey, so in the spirit of my favorite podcast, Jonah Radio, I'm going to play a handful of songs on this episode featuring, of course, Jonah's music and some of the music I heard about for the first time on Jonah Radio and fell in love with also. Going to get this musical through line started with the third track on Jonah's You Can't Call Me Al record, and it's a punk version of MST3K's Every Country Has a Monster called Reptilicus New Wave. Reptilicus is silly, but he really illustrates the great way of monsters all over the place. Not just in Japan, but across the planet. And if he gave it up, he'd get you in panic. For example, please, name a lamb who eats easy peasy, knees and knees. And you can tan, you can meet El Cadeo. And believe, they believe it, and they're not afraid to say so. Scotland, Nessie's living up in a lot. And then in Poland, a scary scarecrow named a bop. See, it's not just Godzilla. There's a bot that can kill ya. Cause every country's got a monster. And every monster's got a country. Yeah.
confused.
I'm still finding my way around this. I've been podcasting for over a decade. The challenge that I try to give myself, which only makes me nervous, is how much can I make it feel for the guest and I, if I've never met them, to be like, we're just friends hanging out. But let me say, for your podcast and all the more, your music, you've brought me a lot of joy with what you've made and put out there.
Oh.
And it's a big deal to me to have this opportunity to chat with you.
No, man, thanks. No, that's kind of what you hope. You know, I think it's Charlie Kaufman that said, like, good art makes you feel a little less alone. And that's kind of, you know, and it's like, I figured if I do stuff that I want to do, that'll show.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do stuff that I don't want to do, it won't feel good for me. And I don't think anyone would connect with it.
Right.
Because it's not done with honest intentions, I guess, to say.
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one who would.
Yeah. So that's very nice of you to say that, because it's like, that's the hope, yeah. You know? That's the hope. That's like, it's like, oh, I like that. Like, I like your shit. You know, I like that. That's the great part. Mm-hmm. That's the nice part of it, you know?
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only person out there who feels that way, out there, like way out there, somewhere out in the world, they get you. No, like I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels that way. I am, right? No, I'm not.
I mean, you're one of five for sure.
Since I've been talking with some people from Los Angeles, not one of whom was born there, which is part of my fascination. And I always wonder how someone measures or how they feel about what they're doing. And I don't know, I guess the intangible idea of success and its many definitions and forms. If you know that people genuinely like what you do specifically and not... how you feel about yourself and the quality of what you do, do you measure it by... the work you're getting
by how's around me?
Well, yeah, like,
yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, you know, and that's something that's like, it's easy to kind of get wrapped up in that through social media and just having friends, you know. It's when I'm out here kind of going, like, it's like I'm doing stuff because I want to, and I love it and I'm serious about it, as opposed to, like, you know, and like, and I'm doing okay, you know. It's like, I'm not, like, I'm still just, like, you know, kind of a working artist, meaning that it's sometimes I'm doing well. Sometimes I'm stressing out. And then in those stress out times of, like, it's like, ooh, it's been a little bit since something paid me. That's the time. And that's when you're in a negative headspace.
Right.
And you're starting to, then that's when the comparison comes in. Because, you know, comparing yourself, that's just another negative notion. Just like feeling bad about, you know, not having work. And so you do start to second guess all the stuff. And I'm, you know, I'm friends, literal millionaires. And they weren't when we started becoming friends and doing stuff together. And now they are. But I'm also friends with people that I think are brilliant and still struggling more than me. And so it's best to keep everything in perspective. And that's hard in, you know, in a city that you're surrounded by a lot of success and money, but also at the same time not. Because, you know, Los Angeles, like any city, like, I live in a very, you know, working class Latino neighborhood. And so, you know, I'm not in a position where it's like, it's nice to just kind of know that life happens every day and there's time to do stuff and to work on not measuring your own self-worth over your accomplishments and comparing yourself to other people, because that stuff is, it's a bad path.
Yeah.
And I've gone there. Like, I've had, like, a light couple years this past couple years, like, you know, you kind of start to go a little like, oh man, like, what did I do wrong? Maybe I should have, like, you know, hosted shows. Like, it's like, that was like a thing where I was like, I never want to be a host of a show.
Right.
My whole thing in my head was always, I want to do fake things. Jonah Radio is a different thing because that's like a celebration of, like, you know, music I like and goofing off with my friends.
Mm.
But like when I did commercials for Bing, the search engine Bing. And like, after that, like, I got offers to just be the host of some science show or some kind of, you know, clip show thing. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to do fake things. I want to, like, act and write and have, you know, just things be, you know, fiction,
right,
as opposed to, you know, reality. And it's those times where like I feel really good about that decision all the time, because that's because like I was saying before, that's the stuff I'm passionate about, fake stuff. But then when you get into a spot where you're maybe not making as much money and you're not working as much, you're like, maybe I shouldn't have had such an ego about, you know, maybe I should like, you know, hosted that Nat Geo show about backyard science.
Yeah, it's only integrity when you're winning, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. After that, it's like, maybe that was, you know, maybe ego got in the way, or, you know, it's but if I wasn't living out here, none of this stuff would have ever happened. I would have done other stuff. I would have stayed creative, but none of the stuff that I've gotten to do that I've really felt were personal successes would have never happened if I wasn't out here.
Right.
And that's the double-edged sword. You know, it's like the weather is great, but then it gets starting to get really hot, and then the fires come. Like, you know, there's an earthquake here and there. And then there's traffic and there's smog, but it's also like really nice and the people are great. It's like, you know, it's just like anywhere, but there is a feeling where it's like, but it's also expensive. And so sometimes you think, maybe if I move to another town, I could have more room in my life and my bank account and my brain to be creative as much as I want. But if you want to make cars, you have to move to where there's a factory.
Right. I've done the factory work, and it requires a long, hot shower every day to get through it.
Shit. Yeah. I hate you.
You spend 10 hours going like, I want to fucking record music. I hate this. And then I get home and like,
yeah,
pick up the guitar and then I throw it back down. Fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. Too tired.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You've spotlighted this in a project. I don't know if it's over. Or it's just like that season's over, but you sort of took advantage of your podcasting prowess to make a show called Social Distancing with Jonah Ray, right?
Well, so that was like a knee-jerk thing out of fear.
Okay.
It's a podcast where I would call people and record the phone calls, and it was just kind of an interviewee thing. That's kind of when I thought the lockdown was going to be a matter of a month or two.
Right.
You know, that's when we were all still kind of hoping for the best with this thing. And I did the thing, the social distancing, and it, you know, it didn't sound good because it sounded like a phone call. And I kind of like that. I like that kind of lo-fi-ness of it. I recorded a bunch and I started to release them. And then the drive I had a bunch of the conversations on got corrupted.
Oh, fuck.
And I lost like 10 conversations with like, you know, different friends of mine, like Mark Maron, and just like, just a ton that would have been good. And that gave me an opportunity to pause and wonder why I was doing that in the first place. And I realized a big part of that was with everything closing down. I think it was like my personal ego started to go, well, what if people forget about you? You should have something to put out.
Oh, interesting.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I'm not embarrassed by it because it's something that I did, and it's something that I had to really think about. And that's, you know, if anything, with this lockdown, this pandemic is offering a lot of people is a lot of self-reflection. And I was like, why was I even doing this? It's like, it was kind of irritating. It's like, I don't really like interviewing people so much. I like hanging out with people.
Yeah.
And so I had to really second guess why I was doing it. And I felt that the reasons I was doing it were not genuine. I think they were ego-based. And so when that drive got corrupted and I just lost all those conversations, I was kind of like, okay, I think that's a sign. Or that's like that's a nice moment to just be like, I think I wasn't doing this for the right reasons and I don't think I should continue. And I'm working on something right now that is a little bit more fun for me, a little more in line with what I like. But it just felt a bit, it felt needy.
Right.
It felt needy at the time. And so, it's funny because you brought that up because I was just like, you know, there's a part of me that wishes like, it's like, I should just scrub that off the internet and hope that people forget that I made the swing like during the first week of lockdown. Like, hey, I got a whole thing called social distancing and, you know.
Well, see, this is why I don't plan ahead with the guests because I like moments like this.
So. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Back into the music with a song by Hopalong Queen Annalise. Holy crap, what a revelation. Somewhere in our convo, I was telling Jonah how I was obsessed with finding singer-songwriters on Pure Volume, like in 2004 or 5. Now, I was very unfamiliar with a lot of current stuff at the time. I remember a few years being pro-punk, but anti-emo. But for 2004, your acoustic homemade stuff, if it wasn't electronically or eclectically influenced, like mine, it was going to be the son or daughter of Jack Johnson, Elliott Smith, or emo bands. And of course, right when MySpace was getting in the mix, what a time. some of the singer-songwriters that I was a big fan of listening to and all through the years here and there on burnt CD mixes I made, it turns out we're all acoustic emo acts, and I never knew. Hey, everyone. It turns out I'm an emo fan. Something else I never knew was about Hopalong or Hopalong Queen Annalise, who just released or re-released her freshman year of college indie album, recorded and or released in 2005. So it's almost like a new album I've loved since I was 20, but never heard of. Thanks, Jonah, Catch, and Neil, for you now from that album, which I bought on Bandcamp, and you should too. This is Hopalong Queen Annalise from the album Freshman Year. This song is Sirens.
Wicked people built those houses with their hands and taught their daughters to play on tin drum sets while old man put a cricket on the piano, and they played chopsticks until their hands went dead, and cats were thrown off the backs of trucks, and hail pulled up the yard to us. See, all wine is a bed to lie in love, and the arms were built to die in, and the garbage man took the cans, kicking and the stud ulcer, and if he wants to, no he can't, cause he's a merry man. But stud ulcer finds out with his short temper, you know what he will do, and she was singing true. If you move out west, it's best to keep a very close eye on your kids and pets, cause big birds have been known to dive and carry those precious things to heavy heights and drop them in a field where sad sisters all come down to kneel and hold their hands to their hearts. I've learned to look all of the things in love.
I guess there's a neediness to me in this podcast. I think, especially because there's not one person I have on that I wouldn't rather just have in my life as someone that I just talk to regularly or run things by that I'm working on and get shown things they're working on. This is sort of like my excuse to have a genuine interaction as opposed to
small talk.
Yeah, small talk or like waiting in line for a 2-minute like autograph question about the show you did.
Yeah.
Time. It's more like the moment you go on the Zoom call, I'm like, he voluntarily is doing this.
And yeah, of course. I mean, you seemed like a nice guy. Like I know it was like a quick ask on, you know, Instagram, but like it, you know, sometimes you just get a bit of a vibe, and it just like it sounded like it was coming from a good place, and I don't know, just I got that vibe. Right. So just know that you kind of seem to have that.
I really appreciate that. Speaking of good vibes, well, not like I'm thinking of this as like a, hey, everybody, welcome to the show. We're going to switch it up now from the serious stuff to some goofy shit. One of the last episodes of Jonah Radio that went up, not the most recent one, you and Cash and Neil were talking about favorite or what you guys think are the best song intros.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I'm not sure what the latency is between recording and posting them.
No, that was like 2 weeks ago. We usually record the day before we put it up just to kind of keep it current.
Okay.
Because of that music-ness.
Well, maybe it's not stolen the zeitgeist of your emotions, but mm-hmm. Would you like to hear me go through my top five favorite song intros?
Yes, I would love to. I would love it. I would love it.
By the way, I think you know this song. God Gave Rock and Roll to You, Too, is the song that made me pick up a guitar in 1992.
Oh. No way. So was it Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
It totally was.
Yeah. Yeah, hell yeah, man.
I've been waiting for that threequel my whole fucking life, and it was worth it.
I loved it. I loved it so much. It
made me cry.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where it's like, when the daughter showed up, I was like, oof, I don't know. New. It's new. And then like they just like, I think it's Samara's, I think she's a little Ted.
Yeah.
Or, and she's Thea. No.
She's a little Bill.
She's Billy. Yeah. She goes, like, it's like once she has that line, she's like, look, it's the future. Like when she's looking out the window, I was like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. But yeah, so like that was a huge thing. I remember like getting that soundtrack on cassette tape and listening to that like on a family trip once, that the Bogus Journey soundtrack. Because that had Primus, yep. Had Extreme.
I didn't have the soundtracks when the movie was still fresh, but I did later in life find the 45 of God Gave Rock and Roll to You Too, and I'm like, holy shit. Mm. But the funny thing, the song intro from Bill and Ted movies that is my favorite is Shouted Out by Slaughter, because the VHS copy I had of Bogus Journey had the music video at the top, and that intro was just like, this station will be conducting a test of the Good Times broadcasting system.
I remember that, yeah.
We're going on a journey, my friends.
It was, yeah.
So that's one of the first. This is way off of a song that you guys might talk about, but Six Different Ways by The Cure. Mm. It just has this really fancy, elegant, string-laden, unlike anything else The Cure put out, kind of intro.
Yeah.
And it's super long.
Which album is that on?
I think it's on Head on the Door, the same album as Friday Am in Love.
Yeah.
But they used it in The Rules of Attraction, the movie with Shannon Sossaman. And
Shannon Sossaman.
Pass the Mic by the Beastie Boys, because it starts off with that jazz sample. It's like that first blend of their multiple influences.
Yeah, that's Sure Shot. Shoot,
Pass the Mic starts off with like that really long horn drone, and then like the turntable and goodness.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yes. Like whip. Yeah, that's that's a great intro. Because one of my picks was Gratitude from Check Your Head.
Yes.
Because I love that bass line so much.
Mm-hmm. I spent days listening to Check Your Head and playing Banjo-Kazooie on N64. Shout outs to anyone who...
Oh, nice. It's funny. And I'm sure like now they're like intrinsically just blended in your mind. Mm-hmm. So if you see something about Banjo-Kazooie, you hear a Beastie Boys song.
Yeah.
When you listen to Beastie Boys songs, you think of Banjo-Kazooie images.
I actually made my parents watch. I used to do music blends with movie scenes, and the only people I had in the house to subject to it was my parents. And I was like, okay, Mom and Dad, watch this part where the guy in 2001 A Space Odyssey starts going through the wormhole, and then I would play Time for Living. Ah. They'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I loved doing that stuff. I had like a little, you know, two VCR setup thing, and then would plug in my CD player to the RCA to like kind of mix the sound and I would do it like two VHS tapes, but also do like movie samples onto my mixtapes.
Mm, I love that idea. I did not pursue that shit.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones was I was doing like it was a sample of Blazing Saddles, and it's like, I got it. We'll roll up a number six on them. What's a number six? So it's like, it's when we go riding into town, a whopping and a whooping. And then the bass line for Sick of It All's It's Clobbering Time starts to like build in. And then I timed it so perfectly right. And it was just, you know, it was great. It was like one of the proudest mixtape moments I've ever had in my life.
Nice. That goes right into my theory that you shit gold. And mm-hmm. My second last favorite song intro is Oingo Boingo's Weird Science. it seems like right on the nose because it's a well-known movie song. Maybe if you're born,
yeah,
if you're born when,
that's a good one.
Yeah. And Boyz II Men, Motown Philly, because that's the first,
oh boy,
first time I ever heard a song where you're hearing people hanging out before they start.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and then yeah, it's a man. That's a good list to do. That like the sounds of hanging out before the song starts.
Yeah.
Like yeah, Motown Philly is one of them. It's ooh shoot, I'm forgetting who did like not R. Kelly, kind of pre R. Kelly, Montel Jordan.
Right.
Had a song.
I don't know what it's called. Damn it, is it This Is How We Do It?
Yes, but yeah. it was one of his two huge hits.
Right.
But like yeah, there was that one of like him, like it was like people hanging out beforehand, and then there's also of course a ton of like Irish punk. Where it's like the sound of people hanging out at a bar.
Yeah.
With clinking glasses and stuff like that.
Like, oh yeah. And that just made me think of Drinking Wine or whatever the Beastie Boys, that track on Check Your Head where it's like, and now here's the sounds of the Wi-Fi and something like that. And I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, the band Dillinger Four has a lot of those too, where it's just like old timey. It's like, now we take you to a vigorous ping pong match where you listen to it in stereo. This will twist your head, that kind of thing.
It's one of those things that you can't justify putting on your own album, but you just know an album that you love has it.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was like before I put out like the official version of that, my Weird Al record, there was like, I had a version of it with like a ton of great samples. But then when Mike Park from Asian Man Records wanted to put it out, I was like, well, this will get flagged and I'll have to like, and then it'll be just a headache. So I just took them out. But like, you know, I had before my version of Dare to Be Stupid, I had like, you know, I had the Transformers, you know, thing. I just had a ton of like fun samples.
Yeah.
And because I love like movie samples on a record.
Yeah.
They're just so fun.
That reminds me of Pure Volume. Before Bandcamp was the best thing, in I think both of our opinions, Pure Volume.
Yeah.
That was the way I would reach out to and chat with music makers, people. I'm like, I'm one, but I don't know what to call us. And some of my favorite ones that I found in their indie songs, like they would have that, like someone had like sounds from Disney's Robin Hood, like haha, suspicious snake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we I put out a punk record when I was in high school, and like we had a song called Home Alone, so we had like in a sample of just like everybody in this family hates me, maybe you should ask Santa for a new family. I don't want a new family, I don't want any family, family suck. And then the song starts. And then we had a one from Back to the Future where it's like now let's do something that really cooks. And then the song starts, you know, shit like that.
Nice.
From the new record recorded and released in quarantine called You Can Call Me Rodriguez, this is Jonah Ray and the song is called Everywhere Man. I got rich and cash, so still all our country's nice. And tried all the different lies, and they're all so boring. Giving up the power, and I found the coward goes. Crisscrossing out of all the things, all so boring. I can creep up the levels, and they freak out the silver hole. Exceptionalism from the pole, the stories that you read told. Power that can hang out in jail, outside to eat values. And build up all the tears, but don't know where they were from.
I'm not fooling anyone, this ain't live.
I definitely knew that you loved the Beastie Boys too, because without knowing it, the first things that I recognized in the intro were that moment from Ill Communication where it's like, if this gonna be that kind of party, I'm gonna stick my dick in the mess. Like, even though that's a sample of a movie,
yeah.
But I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's a Beastie Boys sampling of it.
I took it because I have that, and then at the very end of the intro, I also like, oh, what do we know about partying or anything else?
Yeah, damn.
Which is also another Beastie Boys sample. But yeah, there's a... It just, that was one of my favorite. Me and my friends used to say that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, fine, it was going to be that kind of party.
This might be really not worth keeping on the podcast, but I didn't know for most of my life. It's like a sample of a guy going, sleep late, man, as much as easy on his constitution or whatever. I didn't know that was like National Lampoon Bill Murray. That was Bill Murray from like the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? It's weird when you are watching something, you're like, oh, that's where that's from.
Oh, 007 is a dick and two balls. I did not know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was like one where there was a band called Charles Bronson out of Chicago, and they had one of their songs was a sample and started off with someone going like, 1, 2, 3. And it was like a guy that like had got hit by a car and he was just like, but they're all proud of him because he's like, you know, he can like count and he's like doing better. But it's just like it's him going, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, yeah. And then the song starts.
Yeah.
And it's such a great, like you know, it's like taking the counting off of a song and giving it to this like guy from this punk documentary. And it's like, oh, and then like I was watching that punk documentary. I think it was a Decline of the Western Civilization. And I was like, oh shit.
Right. Was that Penelope Spheris who did that?
Yeah, she did all three of them. She's apparently working on a fourth.
Oh shit. No Wayne's World 3 then, no. I guess.
I mean, she wasn't even allowed to do Wayne's World 2.
That's weird. Before we leave that topic, maybe let me know if this is done before, but if I ever make another record, I definitely got to sample something from Vampire's Kiss, because I only discovered that movie recently. This is the best worst movie ever.
No. Vampire's Kiss is really funny. You just have to look at it in a different way. Like, I it's funny when people go, it's like, oh, they're like, what a terrible movie. I go, it's like, the movie itself is...
Well,
it's neat because it's like you're in the weird world of Nick Cage's character, who's just like clearly just going crazy.
Right. I think Scorsese directed the prior movie written by that guy. It was called like After Hours, and it's never mind. I'm going off the rails.
Yeah, but After Hours, yeah.
No, it's brilliant, but I think Nick Cage's acting steals the show away from the writing in that for sure.
Yeah, it's like it's a real like huge choice and. I think that's the one he like when they talk to, because like GQ did one of those, you know, things where they like they're going to talk to somebody about their different roles throughout the years. And it's clear that they were going to try and like have him try to explain these crazy choices. But when you hear Nick Cage talk about his acting, he's like, there go Vampire's Kiss and this and that. Like, it's so crazy. Huge. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, I was basing that kind of performance off of Japanese kabuki comedy acting, which, and like he's such a huge like student of acting in a global sense,
right?
That it's like he's like yes, like the way the big eyes and the way I moved, and like he just basically breaks down in the most intelligent way the thing that people are going like, you're just being crazy and stupid. He's like no, and like everything he does that's weird is a take on some form of acting.
Huh.
Like when he did oh shoot, what was the kind of werewolfy movie with Cher? Can't remember, but like it's like he kind of based it off of like the old French I forget the director's name, but the old French version of Beauty and the Beast, and like and so he kind of had like he originally tried to do like a little bit of a French accent, and so, like to what you said, yes, it is a bonkers movie, and it's not like the best movie, but it is like a really great fun movie to watch.
Oh,
and if it's entertaining, isn't that what matters?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I just tried to make a sample, like, because I've been trying to like work on like having like doing samples of movies with beats and stuff like that, and like, you know, like kind of make it into like kind of like Fatboy Slim stuff. And I did one where he's going like, I'm a vampire.
Yeah.
I'm a vampire. And then like I have like a beat kind of like, you know, that kind of dumb breakbeat Fatboy Slim stuff. And yeah, so it's like that's another fun dumb thing I've been doing in quarantine.
I have so many notes. I don't want to like lean on my notes like a crutch, but I really enjoy chatting
with
you.
Do what you need to do. You know, let it flow if you want to, just to be in the moment and, you know, read your notes.
I'm in a forest.
I'm here for you. So, you know, if it's like, you know, take a time. If you need to breathe, take a breath. Let's all take a breath together.
Now, in regards to music, but on Bandcamp, of course, bandcamp.com. Couldn't be anything better for musicians.
Mm, yeah.
When you put out You Can't Call Me Out, I think I might have even played a couple of those songs on the episodes of the podcast I was putting out back then. And of course, my podcast doesn't make any money, dude. Don't be mad.
No, I don't. I don't. What do you think? The amount of music I've played on Jonah Radio. I mean,
right. It's fucking awesome. I love that record. I would love to have it physically, thanks. But like the digital files, I keep them well kept. And
nice.
You dropped. I think it's called You Can Call Me Rodriguez this year, not too long ago.
Yeah, you can call me Rodriguez, which was just stuff I made in a like Bandcamp during quarantine.
Right.
Yeah.
So what motivation do you have to make music? Like, did you do that because you're like, well, I got the time? Or do you get a real kick out of making and putting music out there too?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been making music. I just never really put it out. I was in bands when I was growing up all the time, and, you know, loved recording, loved making stuff, still kind of remained, played music here and there throughout the time, but it wasn't really my main thing. But I've always been kind of making songs on my computer and recording stuff. And yeah, so when I made those two songs that I put out for that little single, it was just like, it was, if I'm anxious or something like that, or I feel like I want to kind of have an accomplishment or if I have an idea, I'll record a song, and then I'll just kind of, and then if I feel like it, I'll put it out. That's what's great about the internet and Bandcamp especially, is mm-hmm. I could just, you know, make some artwork, put it up, put it out. And the reason for doing it was just to do it, just because I felt like doing it. There was no real big idea or plan behind it.
I think that's the best way.
Yeah, you know, it's just because for me, it's just the doing, which is what I like about it. I just like making songs, and it's that nice little kind of accomplishment-y thing where, you know, it's like when you're recording and you make something, you make a riff, you put some lyrics down, put a little lead, maybe put the drums on, this and that, maybe a little synth, what do you know? And then you're done, and then you have something. You have something you've done with your creative time. And it's almost like a form of meditation in a way, because you're just kind of like making the thing right there, and you're just kind of in that moment of making it. And that's why I like playing music.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. Like in the Kevin Smith movie way?
Yeah, yeah.
Song number four, baby. So when I was listening feverishly through the Jonah Radio backlog on some nice sunny road trips last year, God, I miss my car and roads. I recall being very taken away by a fun guest episode with a friend of the gang's by the name of Callie Fontecchio, an amazing and talented visual artist from the animation world, who, by the way, like Jonah, has made some acting on Channel 101 shows. Channel 101 drop. I was won over immediately to Callie Kazoo, the name of Callie's music, and immediately bought their album, Bleed Darker and Deeper Than the Seas of Hell, on Bandcamp. The music is outstanding, and there was this single for a song called Ken Burns on Bandcamp with similar artwork. So I thought, what the hell, bought that too. And this is that wicked tune by Callie Kazoo, aka Callie Fontecchio, aka still welcome on TDS anytime, with the song Ken Burns.
Oh,
I didn't know what to expect with when I put out the Weird Al thing, because it was just like doing it was just such a, kind of like a joke in and of itself. It was just kind of fun with friends. And so, yeah. And then hopefully, you know, when everything kind of starts lifting back up, like, you know, there's like, well, we have like another handful of songs that, you know, I could record with a, you know, I did it with a Cody Bottolato and Zach from Fiddler, just like, you know, because they just helped me with like, you know, the lead guitar stuff. And, you know, yeah. I just pretty much did everything else. And it's just, but then when we were rehearsing for doing some of the live shows, it's like, you know, we ended up making more songs to kind of fill out the set. And so I'd like to get those recorded. That'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, man. I'm on board and ready for the Bandcamp notification.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It'd be nice. So just like, I don't know, just because I like them. I like having something. I think about my creative life as a, not a literal shelf, but like a shelf of stuff I've done. So like when I was a kid, or even now, the stuff I like, people put something out and I like it and I have it and I put it on my shelf and I see it and it brings me, you know, some sense of happiness, or it takes me to a place that I feel good about. And so with everything I put out, I kind of think of, do I want that on my shelf? It's like, you know, right now I have 2 seasons of Mystery Science Theater DVDs on my shelf.
Nice.
And it's like, you know, I literally do, but like, this is the stuff inside, like inside my heart, inside like my life. It's like 2 seasons of like Hit America. I have those on my shelf. I have Meltdown on my shelf. I have that Weird Al record on my shelf. I think about basically the shelf of my creative life, and I think about what I want to put on that. That's usually the drive I have for when I really want to make something. It's like, do I want to put it on that shelf of my stuff?
These are all things that maybe not physically belong on my shelf of things that I love by Jonah Ray. I seriously do love the cut of your jib, that which is why I got behind all those things you just mentioned. And when it started with Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's like pseudo you, but it's, you know, you're not swearing on it. So maybe if you do swear in real life, it's like a different, but you know what I mean? You're playing Jonah Heston, but you're still like yourself, funny and riff. And I did not get exposed to that, the original Joel Hodgson show, because in Canada we had Much Music, not MTV. But I saw the trailer for the movie, which I later found out is just an episode of the show.
Pretty much, yeah. It is one of my favorite episodes, though. It's like, it's one of the funniest riffs they did.
Oh,
yeah,
for sure. But like, my introduction to the actual show and what it was, I never looked it up before then, was the Gauntlet or whatever, like the revival.
Yeah, the Return. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Return. Sorry. God damn it.
Oh, no worries.
This podcast just got canceled.
Totally. Dear Todd Donald Show, I heard you call The Return The Gauntlet. Sorry, I'm going to rescind my subscription.
Yeah. It hurts when they say rescind. Very intentional. Oh, goddamn. Okay, I'm going to rein it in a little bit.
No, it's okay. But thanks, I'm glad you liked it, and I'm glad you liked me in it. You know, it's that was a... My take on it was, I was genuinely excited to be a part of the show that was I was obsessed with.
Right.
Growing up, I knew I was going to have that energy inside me, and I kind of thought that energy would be good for the way I would play it. So like, and it would just help me, like, you know, maybe my excitement and like the bots that gave them a better person to be cynical towards.
Right.
And so it's like, it almost gives it a better comedic value. Or opportunity, actually, because they could be mean to me and it doesn't affect me because of how excited I am. And so their jokes can be like a little more cutting and funnier, and because it's like, it doesn't matter because I'm so stoked to be there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the idea that kind of developed as we were working on it, for sure. And it is very close to me because I am very much, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And that's like the closest I'll get to kind of like being me. But at the same time, you know, with like Hidden America, what I used for that character or that version of me was all the pettiness and all the like the jealousy and all the neediness to be interesting and cool and have things to be in control of the thing and, you know, not be like not respond properly when things don't go your way. Like that was also a very, very close version of me, but like it just depends on what I want the character to be and what do I want to exploit about myself to make it so it feels a little, you know, real and genuine,
right?
But still have it be, you know, what it needs to be for the part.
That is some really cool. I hate to use this word because it sounds talk showy, but insight. Like I, just in the moment of talking to you, I love getting to know that about how you look at these projects. I think the work speaks for itself. I'm going to provide links for anyone listening to all the stuff that I can find links for. And for some reason, if you've been living under a rock kind of statement, do me a favor, watch the stuff and fall in love with them too. So I'm going to sidestep my own awkwardness of being super real.
No, I hope you've garnered that. I'm totally, I dig it and I'm fine with it. And so don't feel weird about it.
Okay.
You know, because it's like to have any kind of shame over being, you know, it's like, I appreciate it. And so, and I'm taking it in and I'm not trying to, you know, I will not judge you for being excited because it does stroke my ego, but it also like, but I also, you know, you got to know that I understand it completely.
I do.
Because I'm so fucking cool.
That felt a little therapeutic. This is the people that Todd looks up to giving him therapy. Show. So you've been in show business some way since your early 20s, I gather, right? Or the industry, or
yeah. I started doing stand up in when I was 20. And that's when I moved out. I moved out here at 19. Started doing stand up when I was 20, but I started like performing in front of people when I was about 13. With that was with like bands and doing kind of stuff like that. But yeah, but as far as proper showbiz, yeah, I started at 20, and probably that next year I was like starting to work on TV and stuff like that.
Yeah, in terms of like the parallels of, you know, any human being, the journey of one's life from 20 to 30 is interesting and overwhelming, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are. But I'm sure, you know, the growth, the growth of a human being who could be putting themselves out there in that way, in your case, especially going through those years, do you feel stronger? Do you feel like the fact that you're not in a straitjacket right now is a huge accomplishment, I guess.
I think it's funny the way I think about, and it's so funny because I've been thinking about that so much now, where because I started doing stand-up at 20, and stand-up was never really like my main, what I really wanted. It was the only way I could really kind of figure out how to get into doing show business, because I didn't know how people got agents. I didn't know how, like, you know, I couldn't really afford to take classes at Groundlings, and, you know, UCB wasn't open out here yet. And I just didn't know. And so, like, so it seemed like stand-up was just the easiest way to get in there. And when you start doing stand-up, and I always liked stand-up, but I just was always, you know, I always liked improv and sketch a bit more and acting.
Right.
To when I started stand-up, and there's this kind of thing where you kind of need to know who you are and what you're talking about and what your take is on things, and or at least, you know, that's how I felt about it. And I feel like I solidified an idea of who I was for the sole purpose of exploiting it for jokes that would come out of like this character I've made. And I truly feel like throughout my 20s and then into my 30s a bit, I solidified this idea of what my childhood was like, what my life is like now. And I am now finally trying to break from that. And I realized there was a real lack of growth emotionally, I think, during that time where I could have been, you know, learning more about myself and realizing that you don't have to, like, that changing is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I'm just, this past year or so, it's just, and a lot of that was like now, like, I've been trying to almost even physically move on from that time where, you know, I got LASIK eye surgery because it was just like, I had this fear of not having glasses because I was like, I'm the guy with glasses. That's how people know who I am.
Right.
And I was like, no, but that's just a thing. That's not even who you are. It's just a thing on your face. And so I was like, so I got rid of it. And then I started to, you know, lose weight because I always had this thing where I was like, I'm a big guy. It's just who I am. It's like, I was a big kid and I lost some weight, but I'm still like a big guy. And then the idea was like, you know, we'll lose some weight. Like, you know, almost kind of strip the costume.
Right. The protective barrier.
You know, like, yeah, the protective barrier, the stubble on my face, the long, greasy, floppy hair, the snap button, Western shirts. You know, the
I like your clothes,
the
though.
Dirty sneakers.
I like.
Oh, I love my clothes.
Hidden America, like the outfit in the Boston one. I'm like, I think I bought like a few layers that closely as possible resembled that because I fucking love Jonah Ray. And
I miss that jacket. I can't find that jacket. Oh, and I'm so bummed. But the Boston episode is my favorite outfit.
All right, keep going. I interrupted.
But you know, it's funny because I there's even an episode in season two of Hidden America that I very much, it could have gone the other way though. Like it's like I do a thing where there's these flashbacks to me and these different eras of my life of like different shows,
right?
And like every time it flashes back, it's like I have a like I'm talking differently, or I have like I'm doing like an emo punk guy with like. You know, stuff on my nails and black eyeliner, or if another one where I'm kind of like being really pretentious in a turtleneck, or another one where it's like, and it's, you know, it's like the idea of someone looking for an identity. And I kind of did that in a way where I was just like, I never had an opportunity to really search. I kind of solidified who I thought I was and right. didn't really ever get a chance to try these different things on, which is what a lot of people do in, you know, in their 20s.
Right.
And I didn't. I just solidified it. And I was like, growing up sucked. My dad did a bunch of drugs and like this and that. And then after my dad died about 3 years ago, you know, that was really the start of it, of just kind of like the introspection of changing. I'm trying to remember why I got out on this tangent, but...
It's okay to be lost, because I always am.
Yeah. Wherever we started, I think that's a big thing
about the awkwardness of growing up in this point in your life.
That's right. Yeah,
and especially it can be impacted and force you to be a different kind of protective. It's harder to look inward when there's so much going on outside.
Yeah, and I feel, you know, there was even times where I like just recently, like where I was like, I want to move to England really bad. I want to like try and start again in London. And the idea I have with that, or the urge I believe just kind of comes from like, you know, I started here. There's like, you know, all these people in my life that have known me since I was 20 and saw like me fucking grow up. You know, I had a meeting at FX, just this general meeting just to talk to them. And one guy was like, oh, do it. Have we met before? I'm like, oh, I don't know. And then like in the middle of this meeting, I'm talking about all the things I've been doing and what I'm doing. And as an adult person and adult creative person coming in to talk about business and, you know, show ideas. And the guy goes, I remember where we met. And I was like, oh, where was he? He's like, it was at that party at Zach Galifianakis's house for 4th of July. And remember you threw up like right outside like that bounce house he had rented. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And then like the people kind of laughed and I was like, hey, yeah, yeah. Well, I was 20. So, you know, what were you doing hanging out with 20-year-olds? And the guy's like, well, and then it just got weird. All of a sudden, like I could have saved it, but I felt so embarrassed. I was like, that someone was just like, remember, you know, remember 15 years ago when you were still learning how to drink, right?
This is like the fucking John Hughes high school movie of showbiz.
Fifth song up. If you haven't seen it yet, I'll link it. It's Jonah Ray interviewing Weird Al for Spin recently. Jonah and Al are good friends. I misrepresented my thoughts in an email recently to Jonah when I said he's like, you're Jonah Ray, which I didn't mean to insinuate. He was nervous about it. I meant Weird Al can do no wrong, and Jonah is fond of him and anything he's done and will do. An insinuation I'm making, but well-founded. And that's how I feel about Jonah Ray. And among those things I love and keep on the proverbial Jonah Ray collection shelf is the You Can't Call Me Al EP with this, its fourth track. One of the ones with the music video, and it's a cover of the Weird Al classic. This is Welcome to Amish Paradise. As I walk through the valley where I harvest my brain, I take a look in my life and relax straight pain. That's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things, they leave electricity. Milking cows, Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Oh, and I've been milking and plowing so long that even Ezekiel thinks that my mind is gone. I'm a man of the land, I'm into discipline. Got a Bible in my hand and a beer in my chin. But if I finish all of my chores and you finish thine, then tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. Nah, we're gonna party like it's 1699. Tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. It's been a nice time, I'm sorry. I'm
last week. I just smiled at him and I turned the other cheek. I really don't care, in fact I wish him well.
Zombie laughing my head off when he's burning in hell.
Hey, it's a tourist even if he deserved it. And I'm a sweet dude, you know that's a murder. I never wear buttons but I got a cola. And my homies agree, I really look good in that food. Been spending most of our lives living in on this paradise. Churn butter once and twice, living
would be hilarious, like showbiz as high school. Aren't you that dude at pizza party?
yeah. But that's like, that was a huge, that was a thing I was, you know, and like that made me kind of go like, oh, it's like, you know, I wouldn't mind just going to a new place and starting. Cause I moved to LA when I was 19 and I've just been here ever since. And I love the city, but it would be nice to just kind of show up somewhere as an adult.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've talked about this on the show before, but I've infantilizations about what it would be like to live in LA and not with any industry pursuits, like literally just because I love people who make really interesting stuff and the idea of being surrounded by only that kind of people, not because I want to avoid the maybe more challenging relationships that you can form deeply with people who have no creative urges, but where so many people are just making stuff. Especially the stuff that...
That's what I would say about LA is that it feels like the biggest creative community in the world.
Right.
You know, it's just because it's not just the, like the Hollywood stuff. It's just got so much going on. And everyone you talk to is like excitedly making stuff. And it's different kinds of cultures all like slammed together. Everyone's making stuff.
Yeah.
And it feels you can... There's an energy here. And even if you're like talking to someone, so you're like, you know, an artist, or you know, like, a, you know, like professional skater, or you know, like someone who is a musician or an actor or someone that's like really, you know, an editor. It's like, you know, those are your friends here, you know, it's like everyone kind of does different stuff and it's incredible. And it's really fun. It's really, really fun.
Yeah. I definitely had dreams like a week of my life. Oh, I'm going to see a war paint down the street. And then I'm going to go to a Harmontown taping, even though that's fucking over now. And I never went to Los Angeles. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, that'll be. Then there will another version of it will pop up, you know, when everything goes back to.
Schraub Home Video or something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the plan, I think, was it was going to become that. But everything started shutting down.
Yeah, with COVID. Yeah. Holy shit, man. Yeah. We're a little bit over time, but do you have time for like a little bit of a lightning round?
Yeah, of course. Let's do it.
If you don't feel like you've answered this already, what role does being creative or performing need to play in your life for you to be happy?
Constant. It has to be, it's just another facet of my life. If I'm not doing something creative, I'm not in a good place. So it, no matter what it is, something's going to be going on. And it doesn't mean necessarily it's like stuff I'm going to be putting out, but just the idea of being creative and working that part of my brain is it has to be a constant facet of my life.
That's good news for us, Jonah Ray fans. So I don't know if you play game apps on any devices or even the laptop, or but what's the dumbest game app, if there is one, that you've spent the most time with?
I don't do much of that stuff. I mean, I have a crossword app, but I think the dumbest one, well, it wasn't even a game. It was just kind of like a music device called Bebo or something like that. And it was just like a, like this little, like, on your screen, it would just be like a little bit of a, like a drawn little robot. But then when you push on the screen, it was almost like a little musical instrument. So it'll go like, depending on where your finger was on the screen, it'll go like, woo wee, wee, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then like the robot would like go like, you know, kind of move as it was doing the noises, like wee, wee. And that I spent lots of time.
Nice.
Lots and lots and lots of time using.
Nice. Second last one. What's the worst thing that someone could say to you?
Whew. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, you're not a good person, I guess.
And,
or I don't like you.
And what
is that's like, that's the needy, that's the neediness inside me. You know, that's the thing I'm working on is trying not to care. Right. Who doesn't like me? And I wish it didn't affect me as much as it does, but it is an odd thing that I'm working on.
Well, do you mean like acceptance, active disliking or indifference?
Oh, well, shit. I mean, indifference I can kind of handle a bit more, but it's just like when someone makes it a point to be, you know, it's like, I don't like you, or like, you know, right. You're not good. I don't know what it is. It's just, and that's the thing. It's like, and honestly, that's mostly every, you know, that's a lot of people.
That's everyone.
But that's just something that I kind of, yeah, exactly. Especially, I think, anyone that kind of like puts stuff out there. Because that's in a way, what they're doing. It's like they're putting up a flag and hoping somebody, you know, hears it or sees it and, like, you know, goes, it's like, I agree. You're not alone.
I feel like that's the hardest software to install because it's so true for a reason. The software being like, if someone says something negative about you or to you, it's just a reflection of them. It seems obvious to grasp, but we can never install it because the software is so fresh and we're all working with old shit, old hardware.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
It is a cliche for a reason, and yet I've mastered knowing that, and I still can fail because that's being a human being. It's fucked up and beautiful.
Yeah, and it is. It truly is like a practice. It's like you're never going to be solid at it. It's just the time from hearing it and then understanding that it has nothing to do with you gets shorter and shorter. That's the thing. Just making those two elements, like, because you'll hear it and, like, it's like, you know, you just got to split down, like, got to get down that amount of time where you're like, oh, that sucks. That person doesn't, you know what? That's more of a reflection on them. So I'm okay. You got to, like, that little mini middle area, you got to, like, make shorter and shorter until it's like you know, you can't even see it.
I like it, man.
Just for fun, this last interlude in all of its silliness and all of its glory is from the official MST3K soundtrack, available on Apple Music and more, and from the Netflix revival of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return. There's links to purchase or stream in the show notes. Enjoy.
Jonah, I'm confused.
Yeah, what's your deal? Why don't you shave?
What? Yeah, that too. But I thought giant monsters came from Japan, not Denmark.
Well, Asia clearly has the most monster credibility, but there's a beautifully diverse array of global monsters all over the planet.
Explain.
Preferably through rap.
Oh, all right, if you insist. Reptilicus is silly, but he really illustrates the great array of monsters all over the place. Not just in Japan, but across the planet. An A to Z gamut or gargantuan panoply.
Example, please.
Or name a land.
Belize.
Oh, geez, easy peasy. Mesa amaze. See, in the Yucatan, you can meet El Cadejo. In Belize, they believe in him. They're not afraid to say so.
Scotland.
Nessie's living up in a lot.
How about Poland?
Scary, scary crow named Babada.
So it's not just Godzilla?
Well, duh, crow. There's a lot that could kill you.
Hey.
Sorry, crow.
Okay.
Rose.
Joe.
Yo, Jonah. How's the chorus go?
Every country has a monster they're afraid of in their nation.
Every monster has a country, yeah, a station they call their home.
Guter, Gleeben, Glauten, Kroben.
What turned the musketeer's guts to spaghetti?
Was it in Tibet?
Yep.
I bet he met a Yeti.
Australia?
Their drop bears will impale ya.
Then they'll sell ya hella touristy paraphernalia.
Chupacabra's chewing up cattle down in Mexico. Del Geats, Horns Gorn, battle in the Navajo. Kamo's Conga motto is a mongo flying dino. I know I don't wanna die, but when I do, he'll be the guy.
Whoa! So, Crow.
Servo.
Ready to go.
Start slow.
Cropamon is a monster from Luxembourg.
Who's actually the size of Luxembourg?
He crushed the whole country of Luxembourg.
Because he is the size of Luxembourg.
Egypt's got mummies like Tutankhamen.
Leprechaun, Amelon, and Boston Common.
Bot's got the hang of it. The song's really kicking.
Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken.
By that, I mean Zhufang and Peng. Giant Chinese birds. And one of them turns into a fish. Anyway. Good news, killer shrews in the loop guru, Baba Yaga, Joro Gumu, and the Impundulu. Now you guys realize the surprising size of all the worldwide Daikaiju!
Every country has a monster they're afraid of in their nation. Every monster
Sasquatch
has a country.
That's Canada!
A station they call their home.
Tons of bone for the Swiss.
Every country has a monster they're afraid of.
King of
in their nation.
Blue 13.
Every monster has a country. Yeah, we've got movie signs.
a simple reversal of the last one. What's the best thing someone could say to you?
You make me happy. That would probably be it.
God damn it, man.
That's like the best thing.
Every time I've asked the question and gotten the answer, I've always been inclined to say the thing because it's really how I feel. It just happens to follow asking the question. You've made me happy for 3 years at least with everything that you've done. Oh. Never as much happy than taking the time to chat with me on a Sunday and make me feel good about myself too. And
yeah. No, you're good at this, man. There's a lot of, I know you weren't fishing, but like, it's like, your flow is fun because you're like, you're getting to the stuff you want to talk about, but you're allowing the conversation to flow. And then also like talking about yourself or bringing stuff up about yourself, which is also important, I think, because that's really, like you said before, with the, you know, radio, with like music podcasts, there's a lot of other podcasts that probably do it better, but it's like, it's not really what people are looking for sometimes. Sometimes it's just about the person and not the content.
Well, off the right. Yeah. I make no false promises of this show being for everybody. Like I'm not going to go to the places most obvious that I should, that someone listening yeah. would be like, oh, I would have asked them that after this, but this is the Todd Donald Show.
Yeah. You know, but it's funny. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's in the title. But like, that's kind of how I feel sometimes where it's, you know, like sometimes I'll do like a podcast and people kind of like want to just like, it's like stuff that's already out there, you know, like, they'll be like, oh, how did you get involved in this? Or right. how did you meet this? And it's like, and you know, those are, of course, people like are interested in the story because it helps a natural narrative come out of the conversation. If you kind of go, biographically, mm-hmm. but like, it's like when I listen to someone talking, I kind of sometimes just want to hear like what they're like and who they are.
Yeah.
As opposed to what they've done, you know?
Yeah. I mean, dude, I'm pretty sure I'm a big fan of lots of people that you've worked with as well. And I could have asked you, hey, what are they like? But I genuinely want to know, like, how are you feeling right now? Like, I genuinely want to know what it would be like to talk to you if we were having coffee in person off mic. And that's
yeah, definitely.
The essence of this.
Yeah. Kumail's a really nice guy. If that's what you really want to know.
No, if he ever wants to be on the show, I can ask him who he is. But like to have you on the show, I'm genuinely a huge fan of anything that you do, given that like you do so many things in my opinion so well, from stand up to hanging out and recording it to making music to just being a dope as fuck human being who, like me, we're in our mid to, I turned 36 in a couple of days, scared shitless.
Hey, happy birthday. Yeah, I just turned 38 in August, so.
We're still young.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's still time. That's why, like, I've started like the losing weight and kind of eating better thing is just kind of like, you know, I was like, all right. Cause like, you know, my dad kicked it at 67. And I remember if I was any younger, I would have been like, well, he had a good run. But then like when you're in your like, you know, mid late 30s and like someone that seemed to kind of be, you know, still there and lucid and doing stuff to go, you kind of go, you're like, okay, time to think about like, it's like, you know, I don't want to have to catch up with health kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
What I should have done was not wait till I was 50 to start, you know, eating right and exercising.
Right. It's never too late. All of you out there, definitely, if you're ever in a game of truth or dare with Courtney Love and she says truth, don't fucking waste that opportunity, right, Jonah? And I will provide links. Listen to his music. Listen to Jonah Radio. I think a lot of Hidden America is on YouTube, Mystery Science Theater, The Gauntlet, and The Return.
Yeah, I have a link. I'll send you a link to, I mean, it's all, Hidden America is all free on vrv.co, and it's like free to sign up.
Oh, brilliant.
But I have a link I'll give you to, I put them all up on something, but I'll give you the link so people could click that and it'll go somewhere and they can watch them.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Jonah.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Todd Donald Show, starring, produced, and edited by Todd Donald. The piano music in the rap is by JP Sunga, who you can find at jpsunga.com. The theme music is Mackey Alkino by William Chernoff. Find him at chernoff.band. And I'm Milo Axelrod, Todd's favorite, bar none, human voice. And I'm not bragging, he wrote this. If you'd like to hear more of my voice, check out my podcast, Describing a Rock, in which I describe some rocks. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Please support The Todd Donald Show by sharing it with anyone who might enjoy it. Follow and interact with @ToddDonaldShow on Twitter and Instagram. And if you feel like going the extra mile on iTunes, please subscribe, rate, and review, preferably in its favor. Have a great day, friends.